This is Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy, the arts of attracting, acquiring, and retaining talent. Here's Kathleen.
My guest this week is industry thought leader and HR technology expert, William Tincup, the president and editor-at-large of Recruiting Daily. For decades, he's been writing about HR and recruiting-related issues and serves on the board of advisors and board of directors for over 20 HR tech startups. William, welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad you're with me.
Thank you so much for the kind words and the kind opening, Kathleen. Happy to be here.
Well, I want to start. You have a fascinating academic background. What were your initial career goals and aspirations?
Oh, boy. You know, a career never makes sense in the windshield. But when you look in the rear view mirror, it always makes sense. I went into business school, like a lot of folks, not really knowing what I wanted to do, but just knowing that it needed to do with business. I wanted to make money. You know, entrepreneurship was really kind of at the forefront of my mind. And so that got me to Case. It really set me up because their entrepreneurial studies program is one of the best in the nation. It set me up to understand entrepreneurship, but not be, you know, not by operating, but just understand kind of, you know, the ups and downs and kind of structurally things that had to be done. And so when I got out of business school, I went to my first startup. We raised money. It was during right before the dot-com burst, and we blew through it and failed miserably. But it basically put me on the path at that point. I had my first HR software company as a client, and it put me on the path of creating my own agency.
I understand that you are a curious soul, and it was curiosity that led you to HR.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of owning the ad agency, and evidently you were dealing with all the different aspects of HR. So tell us how this curiosity turned into an obsession.
I it's one of those deals. So I came up through marketing, right? And that was the first organization that I joined, was a web development organization. And I learned more about failure as an entrepreneur than I did about success. And in creating our own agency, we focused on the HR software and HR services vendors, like staffing firms and PEOs and RPOs and all the different parts of HR and recruiting software. And while doing that and marketing those clients to HR, I was also the managing partner that did all of the HR. So I did the internship program, I did succession, I did comp, I did payroll, I did all of that stuff. And I just fell in love with recruiting, all things talent. Recruiting, loved it, fell in love with HR, fell in love with the profession of HR. And when given an opportunity and created an opportunity with my business partner so that he wanted to kind of build a full service agency, I wanted to do more consulting with HR. We created a great buyout and exited successfully out of the business and just threw myself into HR. And some of that is marketing. People are just wired different, and not in a bad way. You know, these are not no value judgments associated with it. But marketing people will. If you send marketing folks an email, they're going to look at your copy. They're going to look at the iconography. They're going to look at the typeface. They're going to look at all these different things, and a lot of it's a bit cynical and jaded in nature, whereas HR knows the darkest and deepest secrets of an organization. They know the sexual harassment claims. They know the sexual harassment investigations. They know the pay inequities. I could go on and on. They know all the dark things of an organization. Yet when you talk to them and you interact with them, they're still hopeful. They're filled with hope for the organization and their people. Mm-hmm. And I just, even though I'm not wired that way, I like people that are wired that way. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to be around more people that were like that, more optimistic and hopeful and you know, just trying their very best to make the people of their organization better. So threw myself into it, you know, without knowing much, not having any degrees or any of that other stuff, got certified through HCI and SHRM and started speaking at a lot of SHRM conferences and just really just meeting more HR people so that I could learn But also in doing so, I created a podcast, Drive Through HR, or one to talk to HR professionals. And so it was a daily podcast. I think we started in 2010, and we would talk. It was a daily. So here's what not to ever do in a podcast. If anyone's ever wants, if contemplates doing a podcast, two things never to do: a daily, that's one, and live. So those two things, never do those things. And if you learn nothing else from me today, never, ever do those two things.
Note taken.
Never. It was horrible. I mean, it was great. It was a great experience. But I did a 30-minute daily podcast with HR professionals, and it was wildly successful. But really what I was doing is I was learning. I used it as a way because there was a 30-minute podcast during lunch. And I'd ask them, what's keeping them up at night? And for 2,000 shows, I'd never had the same show twice because of the tapestry of HR and recruiting is so rich that one day we'd be talking about renegotiating a union contract. And the very next day, we're talking about, you know, recruiting millennials. And the next day, we'd be talking about, you know, compensation structure for executives. Like every conversation was something different. So really, it was like an advanced degree in HR, straight from HR's mouth, if you will. So I loved it. And I don't regret that at all because I don't regret the podcast, even though I make fun of it now, because it was just great learning.
Well, you know, I think you said in the beginning, you know, you had more failures than you did successes. And I think that's the culture I'm really enforcing in my company is the whole issue of being psychologically safe and that it's okay to make mistakes because that's the only way we're ever going to learn.
100%. There's a great story. I did this experiential learning program with the conference board. And it was, I did one with Gettysburg, also did one with NASA down in Houston. And this was the Apollo 12, I think, mission where they, you know, Kennedy had promised to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. And one of the bits that I love about it, and it's just something that I think all organizations could really learn from, is they celebrated failure. And so they're walking through this experience that you don't understand it because they're like, yeah, they had champagne and cake in the fridge. And when an engine blew up, they didn't, aw shucks, that's horrible, this, that, and the other. They'd all go to the conference room. They'd all have a little taste of champagne, a little cut of cake, and then they'd get back to work. And because the failure, they had to fail fast. So if that engine didn't work or that, whatever the bit was, if that didn't work, they had to learn that fast. And so they institutionalized in such a, especially at the time, such a modern way and a modern way of thinking. It's like, we're not going to hide from failure. In fact, we want a failure. We've got some of the smartest people in the world all in this place, all trying to get to the same spot. And we can't hide failure. Failure can't be in somebody's office and hidden in somebody's drawer. We need the failure out in front of everybody. We all need to acknowledge it and go, yep, cool, great, fantastic. Let's get back to work. And I just thought it was fascinating. And like I talked to CEOs about that, they understand and they see it. They see the benefit of it. They don't know how to structurally get people emotionally or intellectually over the personalization of failure. Like I failed. It's like, no, yeah, you didn't fail. And even if you did, so what?
I started it off saying, I'm going to guarantee you're going to fail in this area, and this area, and it's all going to be okay. Yeah. Yep. I have a PhD in because of failure. So it's all worked out. You talk about the HR professionals and whatnot, and I had the opportunity to have Johnny Taylor Jr., the CEO of SHRM,
as a guest of mine.
He's a super, super great guy. And we joked about how recruiters are now at the top of the food chain because of the pandemic. And we laughed a bit about how on, March of 2020 and COVID was just rearing its evil head, we really thought that we were going on a 30-day pause, right? Mm-hmm. And then that turned into 90 days and that turned into 180 days. And we all know the rest of that situation. And as I reflected on that conversation, for my company, the first quarter of 2020 was the best that we had ever had in our 30-year history.
Right.
And then, of course, bam, it was Friday the 13th. And within a week, at least 70% of our searches were put on hold. And I'm curious, what did Friday the 13th look like for you and for your organization?
Well, it's interesting because we're already virtual. So thankfully, Recruiting Daily, it's all over the world. All of our folks are all over the world. So we didn't have the disruption of office to home. Everybody already had a home office. Mm-hmm. And so we actually helped our clients. Actually, we found ourselves interacting with our clients and helping them with structurally how they navigated that. So we found ourselves more kind of consulting there. We had done a couple things accidentally correctly. One is we had carried over revenue, which in the 7 years I've been here, we've never carried over revenue. Like a lot of small to medium businesses, mm-hmm. We get to the end of the calendar year and we reinvest. Mm-hmm. Or you know, zero out or do whatever with the money, but basically it's not brought forward and taxed. And that year from 19 to 20, we decided, well, we have too many initiatives going on. We're going to need some capital in January and February that we wouldn't normally need. Let's just keep the money. And, you know, it was you know, not an insignificant amount of money. We just kept it and said, well, we'll deal with the tax part. Well, that was like one of the best decisions ever in a complete and utter happenstance mistake. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The second thing that really helped us was one of my co-founders lives in Connecticut and he's, you know, really, really hardwired with the banking and accounting community in Connecticut. Like all of his friends, that's what they do. So when PPP first started being discussed, he knew all the details because of all of his banking and accounting friends. He knew all the details before the details were even public. And so we got PPP money really early. We got it twice. We got it really early, and then we got it another tranche later on down the road. You know, as a business, just those two things alone helped us navigate all of 2020. By the time we got towards the end of 2020, the market had come back, mm-hmm. and all of our clients had come back. And, mm-hmm. they zeroed out, because, you know, this happens, they zeroed out their marketing budget, and they had let a lot of people go. And then all of a sudden they realized by the end of the year, like, oh, we actually need marketing. We need leads. Our salespeople need to sell stuff. So it worked out, but I would tell you, and this is true sometimes in business, that it's just accidental. It's mm-hmm. just luck. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would love to tell everybody a glorious story about strategic, vision and things like that. But truth is we just got lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like it is the school of hard knocks. That's for sure.
That's right.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as you know, you talk about the recovery and, I was recently doing something with LinkedIn and they were sharing with me that there are more positions for recruiters
yep.
posted on LinkedIn now than there are engineering roles.
I can validate that. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn, that's a great source. Indeed has the same statistics going on, but I also talked to a lot of HR folks, and they're having more difficulty on, you know, whether or not they're in staffing or RPO or they're corporate, they're having more difficulty hiring recruiters, especially technical recruiters or healthcare recruiters, mm-hmm. Or even situations like in high volume, hospitality or hourly. They're having more difficulty hiring recruiters than they did, you know, data scientists in 2019 or software developers in 2019. I mean, they're all hard. I think that's, you know, I think to Johnny's point and to your point, recruiting has been pushed maybe from one of those, you know, sideline kind of roles to like, okay, everyone's going through a war for talent. Every industry, mm-hmm. every role, everything that you put out there, everyone, whether or not that's because we don't have enough of the talent or the, you know, resignation or people want to work from home, there's like a lot of facets to this. But the fact is recruiting, the job of recruiting got harder. And and so, you know, the technology, the process, all the other things that kind of support recruiting, you know, that enable recruiting, you've got to have all of those things. You got to have your house in order with the right technology and process and team. And oh, by the way, now it's really difficult to recruit recruiters to then recruit the talent that you need. And so you see these massive funding, you know, updates and announcements from folks. Somebody gets $60 million or $300 million or whatever. And the first thing I think of is, how are they going to hire the team that hires the team? It's you have $300 million. That, first of all, congratulations. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Second, like, you know, that just starts that process. As now you the clock's ticking. Now you have all of these things that you have to do with that money, and it all starts with people.
Yep. Well, that leads me to an article that you shared on Twitter in early December. The article's "Should Recruiters Operate Like Salespeople?" Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of lines in here that really resonated with me. Unfortunately, recruiters are measured primarily by the result of their work and not by their practices. If results are the only measure for success, it is hard to help them improve and be successful. And so you talk about sales and marketing departments and the advantages that they have because they have these process automation tools.
Right.
And yet recruitment seems to have stuck in the stone ages. You know, we're still spending hours and hours and hours trying to engage with potential candidates. And you really make the case that it's time for recruiters to scale their efforts like a salesperson does.
It's interesting. I did a presentation. It's not live anywhere, but I did a talk in Dallas at a conference just a couple weeks ago, and it was on this particular topic. And it was really kind of talking about two things that salespeople talk about all the time. And one of it is the universe of no's. So how do you map the universe of no's? From a sales perspective, it's all the different ways that a prospect can say no to you. Oh, I don't have budget. I don't have the authority. I don't know if my team will buy it. You know, all the different ways that people could say no to you. And candidates, there is a universe of no's. And so one thing is to map the universe of no's as a recruiter to understand how do you answer that no? And how do you bring that no to a maybe and potentially bring that maybe to a yes? So that's one. The other one was about offer letters. And some of the best salespeople would tell you is that they don't build proposals for prospects. They build proposals with prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they don't, there's not a, you know, and I make this, you know, this analogy, you know, during my presentation, like you're not Moses coming down from the hill with these tablets. You know, with your offer letter to a candidate. So stop acting like it. Build an offer letter with the candidate. So instead of, you know, build, like literally open up a Word doc or open up a Google doc and build the offer letter with them. Just go, what do you need? What are the things that are critical to you? You want a learning path? You want learning Python? Or do you want to learn Python? You need to make $85,000. Okay, great. You want a $20,000 signing bonus? Fantastic. Like, let's put it in the offer letter together. Because that's an offer letter that then's received because they help build it. That's an offer letter that then goes through the process. And that person receives that, whether it's DocuSign or Adobe or whatever, however they get it. They receive it, but they help build it. There's no shock and awe. And those are just sales technique. That's all that those two concepts, the universe of no and building something with the person that you're selling, or in this case recruiting, those are sales tactics. Like, I remember one of the guys in the audience actually raised his hand. He's one of a good friend of mine. He's a salesperson. He goes, "You're just describing sales." He called me on it. He goes, "William, you're just discussing what great salespeople do." I'm like, "Yeah, I know, but the audience is not salespeople. The audience is HR and recruiting."
Right.
And we need to teach these things so that they understand that they can borrow these concepts, morph them, make them their own, and get there faster and have a better candidate experience, like that offer letter experience. That's a better candidate experience. That candidate now felt like that they're a part of it. Like, you heard me, you listened to me, we built it together. Yeah, I'll sign off on that because there's no surprises in it.
Yeah, well, I think that's a really valid point. And I do find that, you know, especially as people decide if they're going to be a recruiter, right, do they want to work in-house or do they want to work for a third party? Mm-hmm. And they say that they want to work in-house because they don't want to do the sales piece. And I'm like, you are selling mm-hmm. all the time. You all have to sell your company, you're selling the position, yep. you're selling the hiring leader. So I think you make a really valid point. But let's talk about these, you know, the automated sourcing tools.
Sure.
So, you know, you talk about recruiting being a numbers game and you can send out 20 messages and maybe you'll get two back. And, you know, humans can't scale up. So we really do need to think about these things, which, you know, it makes my skin crawl, to be honest with you, William. but well, I do get it.
Yeah. No. Think of it like this. And 'cause you're not alone. There's more people in our industry that are not, it's not fear. It's they want to make sure to ensure that we still have a good experience for everyone involved, sourcing, recruiters, hiring managers, candidates, executives. Everybody needs to still have a great experience, even an even better experience. But if you take some of the low value things, like you and I have worked in a world where there have been people that their full-time job is candidate scheduling. Mm-hmm. That's their full-time job. Mm-hmm. And in staffing firms, you have, you know, droves of people that's their full-time job. There's technology now, bots, that basically can do that in a much more refined way with no mistakes, and it's a better experience for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we take something like that. Just take something as simple as that, scheduling. And take that off the table and say, okay, we're going to make this really, really painfully easy for everyone. It's a Zoom call. We're going to look at Jamie's schedule, Bobby's schedule, the candidate's schedule. Everyone's, we're triage that, find the open spot, book the calendar link, book the Zoom link. Everyone gets it on their calendar. Everyone accepts. Voila. That's a better experience for everybody. And it saves time so that the humans can do the more human-centric things that are needed. So automation isn't necessarily the enemy. Automation is and should be used to take the low-value task that we just shouldn't be doing so that we can then do and invest the time where we really need it, which is in interacting with candidates and interacting with hiring managers and interacting with executives, making sure that people understand. Like, that's those human interactions we need to spend more time on, but we can't spend that time on if our time is being sucked away with a bunch of low-value tasks just because we're used to that and we're afraid to change or for whatever reason. So it's, I don't think we look at automation and throw it all out, and I don't think we, you know, at the same time, I don't think we adopt everything. I think we look at it and say, okay, where are our high-value? But where are our low-value tasks? And the high-value tasks we need to spend more time on, and the low-value tasks we need to spend less human time on. And yet, they still need to be exceptional experiences.
When you break down these sourcing tools, these automated sourcing tools, mm-hmm. they all use artificial intelligence, right?
I would say most of them use machine learning, but yes, they use some type of matching algorithm.
Okay. So you talk about tasks, and I guess I was actually thinking more in terms of roles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of my questions was really, you know, what are the best roles if you're going to use these kind of tools? What are the best roles to use for them? But it may not necessarily just be about roles. It's really about tasks, too. I really hadn't thought about that side of it.
Yeah, you look at your processes and you look at the digitalization part of all of what happens in talent, from finding talent, sourcing, to recruitment marketing, to then getting people to apply, and then all the way through the funnel of application, all the way to offer letter, acceptance, onboarding, etc. And you look at where in all of that vertical chain can we automate some of the low-value things. So like in recruitment marketing, we'll take that as an example. You know, candidates under the age of 30 in general don't mind text messaging with jobs, especially if there's a clarity around the job. Looked at your profile, we've matched you to this role. You look like you're a great fit. If you're interested, job pays this. Love to talk with you more. Like that could be done with a bot, and that could be done in an automated way. And again, if that person is then interested, then you bring them into human contact, and then you start the process. And so there's parts of recruitment marketing, there's parts of sourcing, there's parts of all of the, you know, what's in the ATS, all of the application, the post application process, skills testing and behavioral assessments and background checks and all of that other stuff, all that stuff can be automated and create a better experience for folks. Kind of like FedEx or Domino's does with your packages. Like they let you know, they communicate where things are in the process. Whereas we've left that historically to humans to communicate. You apply to a job, it goes into a box, and then we don't communicate. Whereas now that's the expectation of candidates, is that that's just not acceptable. And it shouldn't be acceptable. And with automation, you can actually take care of that. Like, okay, we've scored your application, we've scored your resume, we've scored your background, and you're not a great fit for this position, but you're a great fit for this other position. Have you thought about this other position? That can be automated. That entire exchange can be automated and should be automated because the candidate deserves a response. And if they're not a good fit for the job, they deserve a response to that. Say, hey, got you, received, you know, your application. We've scanned it. We've looked at it. We've matched it up. It's just not a great fit. There's three requirements that the hiring manager is really, really keen on. And it's these three things, and you don't have either any of the three. And so you're just not a great match, but we want to keep your resume in our ATS so it's searchable so that when we do further searches, we can find you. Is that okay? Like, that can be done with a bot, all of that, and should be.
Well, that's really interesting. Okay, hang on, William. We have to stop here. But coming up on the second part of my discussion with William Tincup, the president and editor-at-large of Recruiting Daily, William shares how technology can help improve diversity and inclusion efforts.
It's rewiring us to think about skills, experience, degrees, certifications, and potentiality, and then depersonalizing everything else, and then letting all candidates, second chance candidates, being people that have been to jail, looking at inclusion in all the different ways that we want to look at inclusion, from generations to gender and sexual orientation to however you want to cut it.
This has been Revolutionizing Recruitment with Kathleen Duffy. To connect with Kathleen or to learn more about recruitment research, go to duffygroup.com.